This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Hing.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Life Enhancement Medicine Hour, leading you down the road to optimal living with Dr. Kevin Wallace and Dr. Zahara Sundermeyer. The doctors will focus on the foundations of health and newfound therapies you may not even know existed. Come join us on the path to your optimal life. Now, here are your hosts, Dr. Kevin and Dr. Zahara.
Hey everyone, this is Dr. Sundermeyer.
And I'm Dr. Wallace.
And this is our Life Enhancement Medicine Hour. We're really excited to bring in our initial talk here to all you out there. And we're just here to also introduce a little bit of ourselves. So I'm going to let Dr. Wallace go ahead and start us off with a little bit of personal introductions.
Hey everyone, my name is Dr. Wallace. I'm actually one of the doctors here at Infusion Health, and I see you see the thing in back of Dr. Sundermeyer's picture here. So we are both naturopathic doctors. I graduated from Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine.
Yep, we both did, where we both met.
Yes. So we both met there. Even though I am much older, she is a much older doctor than I am. So I started late in life. So my specialties, I love to go ahead and do men's health, peptide therapy, which is now, like I said, a huge kind of topic, and obviously overall life enhancement medicine. And so I like that word better than anti-aging. Just because we talk about this a lot, that you can get a haircut from a beautician and you look fantastic and you decrease your age, but we try to work from life enhancement at the cellular level so you can stay optimal for as long as you want.
Absolutely. So I'm Dr. Sundermeyer as well, graduated from the Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine. I am a fully licensed naturopathic physician. And I tend to focus more on the female side of health. I do a lot of balancing of hormone therapy from a woman through prepubescent, just before starting their menses, all the way into a menopausal women, really working a lot with hormone therapy, low energy, thyroid imbalance, adrenal fatigue. And more recently, over the last year, I've started focusing on infertility in an integrative fashion because I am starting to see a lot more young women with difficulties conceiving and dealing with a lot of women that are having undiagnosed autoimmune disorders or just unable to get pregnant. So that's a little bit about myself in the realm of medicine. If you have any questions about who we are, what we do, our clinic name is Infusion Health. Our website is infusionhealth.org, and we are located in Arizona. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of telemedicine. If everybody has any questions, you can definitely reach us in that realm.
And like I said, we see people in Arizona and California, in both states as well as throughout the United States that want assistance in their health. And I think the talk that we're doing today is what the foundations of health.
Yeah. So this is actually a really cool talk. Dr. Wallace actually really was excited to do this one because this is kind of his baby, we'll say. He created an amazing handout for our clients to come in because we were seeing a lot of simple changes that could be made in an individual's health. And so he took it upon himself because he's fantastic at that and decided to create a really cool foundation handout that we actually are going to be providing on our website, but also that we're going to discuss today with you all so that you can kind of get a gist of what we feel our foundations are. Just an FYI. Now, of course, this is all starting, but you can give a call into our show. The phone number is 844-390-8255. Again, 844-390-8255 if you'd like to ask questions. Yep. And our lovely producer will handle all of that.
And if we have to, if it's something more in-depth, then if you leave your contact information, we can obviously contact you, answer them more thoroughly.
Absolutely.
Obviously, over and over the radio, that's like we can give some advice, but if it's something more more in depth, we definitely need to hear the full context of your symptoms.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, a great leading by Dr. Sundermeyer. So the foundation, so we would both see a lot of people that would come in from a lot of other physicians, and they've been either seeing physicians or obviously new patient. And they sometimes want to start with a lot of the extravagant, sometimes medicine that we can do here, you know, i.e. peptide therapy, fertility. But these people wouldn't have the foundational aspects of health somewhat taken care of. And it's the same concept of, like, you know, having a house that's on a very bad foundation. The house is going to be crooked and the roof might be off or anything like that. So we really like to start with the foundational components, because with that being fully now taken care of, now when we add in different modalities, there's better efficacy with the treatment. And also the patient starts to feel better in regards to just the overall symptoms. They actually will go ahead and feel better just with the foundational components, just in general. And then everything that we want to do possibly IV-wise, has a much better, like I said, treatment aspect to the patient. So they have to sometimes even pay less money because they're actually getting seen. They're actually getting results. Mm-hmm. And these are things that you can do technically without money.
Which is lovely. So you gotta appreciate the fact that this is something you can do in your own home. Mm-hmm. especially when it comes to integrative medicine today. Unfortunately, a lot of insurance companies don't always cover. So we do our best when it comes to that realm of medicine to be cognizant of what can you do on your own in your home. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, what with the five foundations we'll be discussing today, you know, they follow through, obviously, water, right? Mm-hmm. So water is our first, and I think a really important topic today to really move into. And so with water, Dr. Wallace, what are your biggest deficiencies that you see with patients?
Well, coming from, obviously, we treat here in Tucson, and so almost everybody is chronically dehydrated. And so there's a great book written, Bodies Many Cries for Waters, and I forgot the doctor's name of it.
I believe it's Dr. Bat Mangaldi. Yeah,
yes.
I apologize. But yeah, your body's many cries for water. Mm-hmm.
And so he basically has a lot of these disease processes that starts with chronic dehydration and how that basically interferes with our body's biochemistry, how certain hormones will increase because of all that stress. And so water obviously is needed because every biochemical process in our body needs water.
Yeah.
And so if those processes can't continue, well, then what is either sped up, slowed down, or out of sequence with other areas in the body? And obviously that's called homeostasis. And mm-hmm. So I learned a long time ago that there's no new processes in the body. They're either sped up, out of sequence, or slowed down. And so mm-hmm. if we're dehydrated, what kind of things are sped up, slowed down, or obviously out of sequence with everything else?
Well, and I think something that a lot of people don't ever think about in our body is everything is transported in our system. Like mm-hmm. think about all the roads in a city, it's water in our body. Mm-hmm. And so the better circulation we have, thanks to better hydration, right? Just in that mm-hmm. basic foundation, mm-hmm. The better your red blood cells will circulate through your body, the better mm-hmm. the minerals in your body, like magnesium, will get transported from mm-hmm. point A to point B. So correct. I think we forget about just like, oh, sometimes I feel like the best analogy to use with my patients I see is that it's like a city. Imagine if everything was just stopped or mm-hmm. so slow, how frustrated would you be? How late would you be? Well, that's kind of what's going on with your body. These processes are slow and things are happening inappropriately.
Correct. So when we tell someone, it's like, great, we want you to take these supplements. We want mm-hmm. you to go ahead and do these other types of things, even exercise. So right. we want you to exercise. Well, if you're dehydrated, our body sits there and understands biochemistry. Well, I don't want you to exercise because you might sweat, and I don't right. want you to sweat. And so now we're lethargic or we're having chronic fatigue. And it's like, so, you know, it's one avenue that obviously needs to be taken care of.
Absolutely. Well, and moving into that, I think something that a lot of people don't think about is the morning beverage is yes. always coffee, right? I mean, yes. how many of you, right, wake up and drink coffee in the morning? I think I'll mm-hmm. raise my hand, right? But yes. the first thing that I do mm-hmm. is I drink at least 10 ounces, 12 mm-hmm. ounces of water before I've done anything. I mean, mm-hmm. I on average sleep 8 hours a night. maybe 10 sometimes if I'm lucky to sleep in, you know.
Saturdays
is my favorite day of the week. Mm-hmm. But if I've gone 8 to 10 hours without any hydration, mm-hmm. and depending on the individual, maybe you've also woken up to use the bathroom in the middle of the night, how much hydration have we lost?
Correct.
And so, I mean, waking up and trying to start my morning with a little bit of hydration versus coffee or green tea or black tea with dehydration, you've already started a better circulation in your system that day, better energy during the day, cognition can be better. So I think mm-hmm. that's really cool. With water, Dr. Wallace, there's multiple applications, right? So, I mean, what we're thinking, filtered water is obviously what we always encourage individuals, but there's also RO and alkaline.
So, you know, obviously everybody knows the water from most municipalities are mm-hmm. obviously probably toxic. And so I think both myself and Dr. Sundam are a big firm believer in keeping things as simple as possible. So if you have an RO system, you can put into your house that's cost $1,000 or whatever. Great. But sometimes just a simple water filter. I use zero water filter. It's one of the ones that I use. And it's like it has been tested mm-hmm. to remove some of those components.
Yeah.
And it's all right. So we always wanted to have people try to eat, drink as clean as you can. And obviously, which Dr. Sundermark might have said, it's like you have to stay away from plastics. The soft plastics will absolutely destroy us because of the phthalates and other chemicals that are in the soft plastic. Mm-hmm. So you have to imagine they're bottled, they're transported in plastic, they're never transported cool, they're transported in a hot container, they might be sitting outside, mm-hmm. All that stuff, and all those things leach out into the water. And great, you're having water, but now you're actually treating yourself, like I said, to the lovely chemicals that happen to be within that water.
Yep, plastic tea. I actually have an interesting story about that as we move into our next subject. So when I was much younger, going into college, I worked for a pretty nice resort. And that resort actually stored its water in the loading dock, mm-hmm. which in Arizona, a loading dock is,
it's like,
I mean, how hot would you say it is if outside it's 115, how hot would a loading dock be? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Correct. So around all the cement and all that.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. so, I mean, we never know where plastic, I mean, and granted, when in doubt, yes, drink your water, mm-hmm. but you know, when you can be cognizant, when you can be aware, when you can take your, you know, stainless steel container out, glass container out, use that mm-hmm. if and when at all possible.
Yeah.
There's a really great website if you want to look at your filter. It's the EWG. We have no affiliation, but that's the company that we utilize to evaluate our mm-hmm. water filter. So you can take a look at your Pure, your Brita, mm-hmm. etc.
Yeah. And so there's the EWG, as well as I do believe the one that we suggest, the zero water filter, if you put that in, and they can actually put in your zip code and I will check mm-hmm. to see if your chromium 6 is high or prevalent within your mm-hmm. table or within your water system. And so obviously everybody knows Aaron Brockovich.
Yeah.
Made that famous, but you can actually go to there and put in your zip code and it'll actually have the statistics in regards to the chromium 6 that you have.
Perfect.
And then obviously water, everybody, you know, the typical thing is half your body weight in ounces, mm-hmm. but that's the starting point. You know, if you're in Arizona and you're a triathlete, if you're out just mowing the yard on a regular basis, you probably want to go ahead and drink more of that. Obviously, you know, your urine should be somewhat clear. You know, if it looks like apple juice, then it's like you probably have some issues with dehydration, minus some of the minerals or the vitamins that we take that should make your urine, you know, neon yellow.
Nice, bright.
Yeah, nice.
Well, moving on there. So with that, obviously you can't have water without your food, right? The other base foundation when it comes to our nutrients and what we put in our body. And so today I'd say how many diets, we'll say, or fads, fad diets do we have going today with health? I mean, I can think of three. We have, you know, obviously keto is huge right now and paleo, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Any others that you can think of that are in there?
Well, it's like we have a carnivore, which I just found from a patient, and I'm like, okay, I like that to a standpoint. So Again, I think one size does not fit all. I think if there's a certain symptom that you have, like cancer, mm-hmm. you know, keto, because we want to get rid of sugar, but our bodies do need carbohydrate. And so again, we try, I think both Dr. Sundermeyer and I want to have educated people. So it's like, you know, here's good choices, but then here's bad choices. You know, if you had Absolutely. A flip chart and it's like you had fast food, or if you know that, you know, through your day, you had to rip open a box or rip open plastic, and that was your food. In that regards, it's probably not going to be the most healthy. Mm-hmm. The caveat is the one that is the most studied is the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
And so that has the most studies backing in regards to longevity, less heart. And so I'm not against keto and I'm not against paleo in that regards. So if you need to contact me, you can contact me, but I'm not against those. I'm just against the concept that it's like, as a patients, when they walk in off the street and they have no clue about what to do, it's like, let's start with some basics. And yeah. I think Dr. Sundermeyer does this as well. It's like, if we look through your diet diary and it feels like you're having no vegetables, I'm not going to change everything. It's like, mm-hmm. let's just add in one extra bowl of vegetables. And as you start to build upon those healthy habits, then you'll feel, yeah. you'll start to feel better. And then you yourself will probably start to sit there and go, well, okay, let's get rid of all the other stuff.
You know, and I think that's the one deficiency that I do see in a lot of my diet diaries when I'm reviewing them with my patients is that, I mean, I know that vegetables don't always taste the greatest. You definitely have to be a creative chef or home cook to really make them taste great. I mean, I had Brussels sprouts recently at an amazing restaurant. And I was like, wow, I could have bowls of these, but at home, awesome. I would never be able to pull that off. But I mean, if you're not even getting a cup of vegetables every day, I mean, where do you think your nutrition is going to be in the grand scheme of things? And I think a lot more people, I think this was actually the coolest thing a patient told me recently, is that she started trying to get better nutrition from her food because she realized she was taking so many supplements. She was reliant on her supplements, mm-hmm. which depending on where you get them could be full of a lot of inappropriate nutrients, but she was reliant solely on the pills she was taking every day to get what she could get from a lot of her food. And so just trying to shift that mentality over into, wow, this is what a plate should look like. You know, I always goal for people that, you know, 40 to 50% of your plate and or bowl mm-hmm. should be full of a vegetable and not corn. Mm-hmm. I always remind people corn is not a vegetable. So that does not count. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's legumes and then grains, which again, don't count either. So, you mm-hmm. know, your dark leafy greens, your asparagus, your cauliflower. So being conscious of that, I think my favorite part of talking to people is eat your greens or pretty colored vegetables.
Correct. Yeah. Eat the rainbow because every color has a different antioxidant that helps obviously help with different abilities. So everybody knows, you know, oxidative stress, free radicals. Well, what's quenched is obviously mm-hmm. eating our vegetables from different myriad of colors.
Right. And
so if we understand this, like red has resveratrol, these different types of things, we can actually sit there and start to eat those types of things and actually affect our body. Because same thing, it's like Dr. Sundermeyer and I, it's like, obviously we have to supplement people, mm-hmm. but man, it's like, I don't know, you know, we do consulting in California, and unfortunately the doctor that was there before us had people on like 20 different things. And it's like, I can't take that. I mean, there's no way. I mean, that's breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And then we would take over the patient's case and have them do a diet diary and find out that the only time they had a vegetable was at dinner time. And then it's like a piece of, like you said, corn or peas. It's like, no, breakfast, you know, the typical American, which I am, you know, I grew up is eggs and bacon and pancakes, which I still love. I still eat, but it's like, it's okay to actually have a bowl of vegetables possibly in the morning time.
I actually proved that this morning. I had sauteed spinach with tomato and avocado and black beans. It was a very interesting breakfast for me for sure this morning, but I'm moving into my own little juice fast. So, I think a basic goal though for vegetable intake for the average individual should be what, like, I don't know, two to three cups a day, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So if your coffee cup is a certain size, which I always tell people, unless you have the big goblet, In that regards. Least, like I said, fill that up in your brain 2 to 3 times per day, and that's what you should technically be having. And obviously, variety is the key. Mm-hmm. And depending on if you have a sensitivity to a certain vegetable, obviously those things are discussed during treatment. Or if, like I said, if you need testing because you have GI issues, that, yep. It's like I've had a patient that was actually allergic to broccoli and some of the cruciferous, and they actually felt better being on a very crappy diet. And that was like a test. I said, hey man, go, you know, I don't ever tell you this, but go down and eat Taco Bell, see how you feel. And he was actually, his stomach felt better. And then we did a food sensitivity. He was allergic to like a lot of the healthy foods. Yeah. So obviously we didn't incorporate Taco Bell into his, into his nutrition plan, but it shows to tell you that if we have a sensitivity, the stuff that we're not technically sensitive to, it's like mm-hmm. our body will go, okay, I know how to digest this. It's not the best for us. I don't get inflamed. And so those are things we have to put into
it. But, yeah, personal bit there is that I have my own allergies to broccoli and cucumber. So I no longer get to eat cucumbers, which is sad because I really like hummus, but
oh, I know. Yeah, hummus is good.
But I'm a high severe allergy to both those foods. Mm-hmm. I think with that transition, I mean, with protein today, I think protein is such an interesting conversation when it comes to people's diets, because I think today we think of protein as really necessary. I mean, we have a lot of athletes, we have a lot of people that are really being cognizant of their diet, eating small frequent meals or high protein rich meals. But really the protein sources today that I think a lot of people are getting are full of inappropriate fat structures, but also lacking in good nutrients for us because of the way those animals have been raised. So I think my favorite soapbox moment with all my clients, so you all get to hear this now, is that eggs being vegetarian fed. And who knows who's going to dislike me for that. But I will say that there's this hilarious post that I see randomly that scrolls around, and it's in my memories now, if anybody does Facebook with their Facebook memories. But in my Facebook memories once a year, I see this cat like stalking a mouse, right? And then out of the blue, this chicken will pop over and
take that mouse.
And it's like, it's such a great reminder that, hey, chickens are not vegetarian. So if we're feeding chickens vegetarian feed when they're supposed to scratch and have bugs and lizards and mice and, you know, other, I mean, yes, greens as well. Mm-hmm. But what do we think that we're helping their chemical structures with, and how in turn is that protein going to affect us?
Correct.
So I like to remind my patients when I'm doing the food section of this foundation handout is be aware of where food was intended to be or how food was intended to be taken care of. Because I think that that's obviously really important. And then of course you might not be able to eat protein as much because unfortunately, I don't know why, we talked about this the other day, organic and grass-fed, grass-finished and free-range and pasture-raised foods tend to be more expensive.
Yeah, correct.
But you know, if you're getting better sources of protein, your system's going to have less inflammation overall, better chemical structure again. So just being, I think, aware of that is important. Yep. And of course, the better you eat, the better fiber you're getting in your system, I think that you're going to just lead into better detoxification for your cells. Yep. And I think I saw something the other day that we have like 100 billion, I don't remember how many zeros and commas, but like 100 billion, 100 trillion cells in our body that we have to take care of. And we only think about like this as being a one being concept.
Correct.
So better detox, better elimination, you're just going to start feeling better overall.
Yeah. And then real quick back to the vegetables. So obviously the Clean 15 and Dirty Dozen. So everybody's heard about this environmental working group. So go to environmental working group, Clean 15, Dirty Dozen. So you can sit there, and if you buy the ones that are high in pesticides, please buy them organic. Otherwise you're just unfortunately increasing the toxicity in your system.
Absolutely.
And so with protein, so same thing. So it all depends on what your goals are. It's like we always sit there and say it's like good protein structures. Same thing with beef. So everybody knows omega-3, omega-6, and omega-9. So I have any problems with a lot of the omega-6s, and obviously everything has to be in balance, but we have way too high of omega-6 and omega-9 that is basically pro-inflammatory, and the ratio to omega-3 is less. So when a cow is fed grain, that structure goes to inflammatory in the meat, and then we eat it, and then we get inflamed. And so that's why I think there's a lot of bad myth in regards to steak or meat, those types of things. Obviously, it's like it depends on each individual situation. But, you know, I'm a firm believer that, you know, I'm vegan and vegetarian and stuff like that. It's like, unfortunately, it's like I do eat meat. But obviously, there's a fine line between it's like, all right, I'm going to eat the proper forms. And obviously, each patient has an individual, like I said, context. If we can just show them the right ways to go ahead and eat, we'll get the better structure from it.
Perfect. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's also why a lot of cardiologists recommend a red meat free diet because of that. Exactly.
Yeah. Yep.
Well,
and so we talked about that. And then obviously it's like, we're big proponents of berries and, in that regard. So dark berries. So we talk about antioxidants. They're very high in anthocyanidins. And so those things are actually a big word that just means it helps quench free radicals, as well as pomegranate juice. So there's a lovely enzyme called a PON1 enzyme that helps the body detoxify. And so if we can kind of speed that process on up a little bit, and we can do that by pomegranate juice, obviously diluting it in water.
Actually, so started eating more cherries recently. It's not a fruit that I ever ate in a consistent amount. I mean, blueberries, yeah, but strawberries, yes, but not really cherries. You know, growing up in Arizona, it's not always able to get in an organic standpoint, but I will tell you that my skin does not burn the way it did when I didn't eat cherry. So I have always been what I call, I get lobster burn. So I have to be really cognizant of my sunblock. I have to be really aware of when I'm going out. I've had some horrid sunburns when I was much younger. And I will say that I am astonished at how much more my skin can tolerate the sun because I'm eating red fruits more consistently. I thought that, you know, going with those antioxidants that support the tissue.
And so we talk about protein, obviously nuts and seeds. You know, we can kind of cater to specific things, like if people are low in zinc, pumpkin seeds, selenium, Brazil nuts. So again, it all depends on how the person represents. If they have maybe a histamine intolerance, then maybe we have to limit the nuts or find out what's going on, you know, in that regards. But it's obviously a good source, minus the barbecue powder they put on it. So, you know, it's usually raw, not like the good old days that I had. It's like you just stick a thing of sunflower seeds that was ranch or, you know, the hot stuff and just suck on those all day. So yes. And then what we'll talk about maybe in the future is like we do seed cycling, and obviously the nuts help control our hormones. And so that's another topic that we'll get to later, but we can actually manipulate some of the hormone structure by actually eating different types of seeds and the lignans that are in the seeds that can help us on out.
I think we have one scheduled in the future looking at hormone imbalance and seed cycling. That should be coming up soon.
Yes. All right. So what about fish, Dr. Sundermeyer?
I know that's the hardest one for me. I feel like fish is coming to a place where, well, one, I mean, we all love sushi, right? But we're eating more farm-raised fish today than I think a lot of people realize, and most restaurants and sushi houses and just anything that we're purchasing from most stores. But so I think today fish is going to be higher in our heavy metals than I think anybody is ever realizing. Even wild caught fish, which is so sad to say, we're not helping our oceans very much. And you know, there's a lot more mercury and heavy metal toxicity being present in bigger fishes like salmon and tuna. And so when we talk about fishes, we're talking about size does matter, right? The bigger the fish, the higher the burden of that fish, and that they're going to contain heavy metals and chemicals in their systems. And so as you move into bigger tuna, I mean, some tunas, I think I was watching this sushi show that some tunas can be how many thousands of pounds?
Oh yeah, it's crazy.
And I was like, that's a trip.
Charlie, the tuna's on steroids.
But so. I mean, if you think about that, that creature, that fish, that tuna, right, has eaten so many other fish. And in turn, it's an accumulation. They accumulate the environmental load that other fish had. So the smaller the fish, the more likely they're also eating either much smaller fish or plankton and algae. So what sardines and mackerels tend to be really, really healthy fish. I think sardines are hard to consume, but I encourage it and I try them, and it's for sure hard, but you got to get your...
Correct. Wild Planet Brand has a great one if you can find it.
That's right.
It's not the typical. We found them in California at a lovely place called Grocery Outlet. Here's a plug. But if you're in California, you can go ahead and reach out. Not affiliated. You go to Grocery Outlet, and it's like they have a great one. But I'll give the caveat about wild caught. So a lot of times, I just read a study in regards to, yes, they do have a little bit higher, but the fish also has very high in selenium. And so selenium sometimes counteracts that other toxicity that's in the fish. So that's why we want to go ahead and have wild caught, because that, as compared to farm, toxic, but they check the selenium levels and the selenium levels are low, so they don't counteract each other. So within the meat of the fish, it's like it's higher in selenium. It helps, like I said, our body actually handle that extra toxicity, and it actually helps it on out. Still bad for us in a sense.
Well, but it just also shows the nutrients of wild caught versus, you know, kind of more farm raised.
Farm raised.
How they have that better balance to make sure that we do have some protective mechanisms to our own bodies as we consume food.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Awesome. And great study.
So obviously, that leads into some of the fat content. So, you know, obviously our body, cellular structure, a myelin sheath, the phospholipid layers around our cells, our brain, you know, all those things are fatty acids. And so, you know, the whole history of, let's say, nutrition, you know, the carbohydrate lobby went out, and then unfortunately bagel shops went up and disease went up, and everybody thought fat was the evil, which obviously excessive amounts or different
inappropriate. Like
structures are inappropriate, but fat is not an evil in that regards. And so, it's like we're a big firm believer in eating your healthy fats, just because we know that, you know, the axons and the brain, everything like that stems from a lipid bilayer. Your hormones are made out of fat.
Yep. And so I'm going to backtrack just a little bit. So Dr. Wallace gave some really cool clinical names about our lipid and our phospholipids and our myelin sheath. And what that basically means is all of our cells have a wall. So think about the room you're sitting in right now. Think of each of that wall being made up of different types of fats, right? And it's our protective layer. Our brain is a big fat ball, if you want to think of it like that in simplest forms. It's made up of a bunch of lipids or cholesterol or fat. And so, and our nerve tissue, anything, you know, any conduction, basically, like think of an electric impulse. You turn a switch on, the light turns on. Well, in our body, that's done with a protection of a myelin sheath, which again is also made up of fat. So just some information for you all out there, so that, because Dr. Wallace has great words for sure. But
So now another analogy, because I wear soft contact lenses. So when a soft contact lenses dries out, obviously, like it doesn't get oxygen in and out of the contact lens. When it's nice and moist with saline, it obviously permeates, and oxygen is able to permeate through.
Right.
And the statement that Dr. Sundermeyer made is that we are made of trillions of cells. Mm-hmm. So every treatment that we do has to come down to the cellular level. How can we get oxygen in and out of the red blood cell? How can we get nutrients in and out? And how can that cell communicate with other cells? So if that phospholipid fatty layer is deficient, or it's very rigid, okay, like cement, well, stuff can't come in and out of that cell. It doesn't communicate well with other cells. And so that's where a lot of treatments sometimes fail. And that's because a lot of times it's because the foundational components are not followed through. I'm dehydrated, the cell's dehydrated. I'm not getting my vegetable content in. I don't have the micronutrients to actually help with biochemical and cofactors. I'm not eating enough fat. So what does our body have to do to make sure that we're actually still alive and breathing? And what other processes kind of get left on the wayside? And so if we can create those things every, 90 to 120 days, old red blood cells are being destroyed, new ones are being built. And if we have the ingredients, we have a powerhouse red blood cell that's ready to go kick butt, take in oxygen, travel throughout the system, clean the system on out. And that's, you know, when people start to sit there and notice that there's a difference, they start to feel better.
Well, and I also think that that's a really good point, that sometimes you're not going to feel the improvement right away, right? Oh, I mean, correct. Sometimes it can take 60 to 90 days to really know better improvement, because you have to make sure that your cells have kind of regenerated and our whole body regenerates. I mean, I think what every year we have a whole set of new cells, depending on what organ or body system we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it does take that time. I mean, when I'm working with young women and, you know, in their 20s, 30s, and into the 40s, and we're working on hormone balance, I say we have to give it two cycles. So anywhere from, you know, 60 to, you know, 70 days to mm-hmm. be able to see if what we've started today will make a difference. So we talk about, you know, being cognizant. Normally the first cycle might be even worse as we make positive changes, because right. your body's starting to try and attempt this shift that it's not really sure, like, oh gosh, okay, these, we're changing stuff. And sometimes when we're shifting, we're also doing a little detoxification. But now that your body's more apt to do that, you know, over time, you're going to know, wow, I wake up and I feel refreshed. I'm waking up and I feel good. Or, right. I feel less heavy and my brain works. And I tell women sometimes, and sometimes your wit and snip will come back. You'll feel snippier and you'll be able to kind of get back at your significant sarcasm. Others. That sarcasm comes right back.
That's one of the questions I always ask. It's like, how are you doing? Is your sarcasm back? When somebody makes a comment, are you able to, like, bam, get right back to them? So that's when you know people
good
are getting
banter.
Better. So obviously we have other things, basically carbohydrates and mm-hmm. dairy and stuff like that. So carbohydrates are not an evil. Okay. They're not. It's like I was just helping a patient out with insomnia yesterday, and then he was totally keto. And so our body needs carbohydrate. You know, this is another biochemical process to make insulin. Insulin helps mm-hmm. convert tryptophan to serotonin, and then you're able to sleep better. So carbohydrates are not an evil, but we obviously have people limit the carbohydrate intake because obviously insulin's resistance, sensitivity, and stuff like that. So there are good and bad carbs. Obviously Milky Way as compared to broccoli or whole wheat, you know, minus, so hopefully you can get it from a non-glyphosate or something like that. But, you know, we're firm believers and it's okay to go ahead and actually incorporate carbohydrate.
Well, and I think that that's also depending on the person. I have patients that don't handle carbohydrates. I personally don't do a lot of gluten containing products very well, but I'm great with rice and corn. Mm. So the question ultimately is what works best in your system? So it's not, you cannot generalize anything in health today or in medicine, right? You can't say 100% of people will do great with this.
Correct.
No, that's why we do testing.
Correct. And that's, you know, we talk about it. It's the individual, the patient that's coming in to see us, because we're actually individualized medicine. Cancer, yeah, we're going to definitely get you into ketosis and stuff like that. You know, a guy coming off the street, hey, I want to feel better. And he's had a nutritional kind of habit for 30 years. We're not all of a sudden just going to go bam. It's like, it's okay. Let's switch out some of the unhealthier carbs for healthier carbs. Maybe mm-hmm. glycemic index is different. How to, like I said, stack foods with fat and proteins and stuff like that.
And so, depending on how you've been eating food will determine how things we start the shift and how you might start a shift in your own health, right? Because of course, if you've been a carboholic and we eat our donuts and our bread and our sandwiches and our pastas, and, you know, we're still eating toast with, you know, every single meal, I mean, we might encourage, the only change that sometimes I make with people is we're going to pull out some of this grain, especially if weight is your biggest issue, or blood sugar control or cholesterol are your biggest issues. I mean, carbohydrates will always be the first thing that we try and work with, but I don't think I've ever limited. I say, you know, you get this at this extent, but you know, when people are doing, you know, two sandwiches a day plus toast in the morning plus pasta in the evening, I mean, you know, we want to make sure that the nutrients are present. And in turn, you know, obviously we need to shift into that, you know, where are you moving? Are you moving at all during the day or week, or are you sitting way too much? Which I think is a perfect, I think we hit it all on the food area.
Yeah. So perfect segue into exercise.
Hey,
She's awesome. I don't even need to be here. It's like, you're going to see me start doing this out of the picture. So, yes, exercise. So in the simplest form, it's like, what are we doing to move? Movement mm-hmm. is life. And our sedentary lifestyles, obviously, I think a lot of people know that sedentary is like the new smoking in regards to just sitting. Our body yeah. is meant to move through life, you know, in that regard. So people go, well, why do I need to exercise? Obviously, exercise, movement lubricates the joints. But a lot of times I tell people, it's like, if we can get past the point of normal breathing and our resting kind of rate, mm-hmm. obviously getting old carbon dioxide out of the system, getting, like I said, oxygen into the system, getting it further up into the brain and those mm-hmm. types of things. Because I tell people, if we're just normally breathing throughout the day, it's like those things just build on up poorly or whatever in different mm-hmm. tissues. And so obviously movement, which we talk about, if you're diabetic, you know, we move and we start to go ahead and really utilize the muscles, it's going to burn through basically sugars and stuff like that. And glycolysis, another fancy biochemical. So you're going to actually utilize those things on up, which is fantastic. But obviously every disease process studied known to man, cancer, all these things are improved with exercise. Okay.
Yeah. I think an important point with that though is today's lifestyle maybe, or work lifestyle tends to be a very stagnant, where we sit. I mean, I think you and I know that in our own profession is where am I in, most of the day, Monday through Friday, I am sitting at my desk and I'm on my computer. So when can you take advantage of standing up, of stretching, of walking around your office? Maybe you can take 10 minutes at lunchtime to even get a small walk in. Correct. I think when people are starting out, they think, oh, I got to get a personal trainer and I got to go to the gym and I got to be there 7 days a week for an hour. And I remind people that that's how injuries happen. If you've mm-hmm. gone from nothing to 1,000, right there, you're going to hurt your back, you're going to hurt your knees, you're going to affect your shoulders, your wrists, your elbows, depending on right. what type of exercise you're doing. So, I mean, maybe a personal trainer is amazing, but where are you in this? I mean, can we get you walking 15 minutes a day? That was a compromise I made with a patient recently. We're going to mm-hmm. walk. Correct. 15 minutes a day. Like, let's just get you outside. Mm-hmm. Let's get you circulating. Let's see how you feel. And she was like, my mood is improved just by mm-hmm. doing that. And now we're increasing her because she's mm-hmm. gotten used to that. She even told me, which I was so excited because we would be dealing with some pain with her, is that even her knee feels better.
Correct.
After moving, she felt like the stretches mm-hmm. were helping her. So what little things while you're sitting by your desk and you have 5 minutes, can you do to actually shift the system a little? Can you stand up tall and reach for this, you know, the ceiling? Can you bend over just slightly and attempt to touch your toes? Like, where are you with that stretchability? Well, oxygenate the tissue.
mm-hmm. Correct. And so that leads into a perfect exercise. So my background is physical therapy. So I used mm-hmm. to obviously train people all the time in that regard. And so being a new doctor, I've sat more in the last 5 years than I have ever in my physical life in regards mm-hmm. to being, but I still move. And there's different, like I said, relief positions. One is called a Bruger relief position, mm-hmm. which actually helps the body align itself over, you know, head over shoulders, shoulders right. over hips, those types of things. So these are the things you can always go ahead and message us or email us and we can send you some exercises to do.
We might try and get that on our website too. That way we can have some resources for you all if you're looking yeah. into that. Now, of course, make sure you're talking with a practitioner if there's any right. bigger things, but you right. know, basic stretches I think are important.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then, so with exercise, obviously it's like if you're more pronounced in regards to, well, I've been exercising a lot and then I'm not gaining weight or I'm not losing weight. Sometimes people get so accustomed to a certain exercise, especially aerobics. The body gets so efficient, it actually slows down. So, you know, a lot of times we have to tax the system, you know, like Dr. Sundermore said, walking. If I have somebody and they're walking 15 minutes and they go, yeah, I'm doing this, it's really easy. Well, after every 2 minutes for 8 seconds, you're just going to yep. go as fast as you can. And then back to 2 minutes of normal walking, 8 seconds as fast as you can. Mm-hmm. So obviously, physiologically, it taxes the system. The body has to make a response. And then the caveat with people that are ultra stressed and the cortisol level is in the tank, do not mm-hmm. exercise 5-7 days a week. Okay. So those are the things that, you know, we can build your system back on up, get mm-hmm. back to CrossFit or being in the gym all the time. But sometimes we need to tell people chill.
Yeah. Okay. I have some patients that, were really sad when I told them that, but I was like, yeah. this is the only way I think you're going to see any positive improvement. There's some mm-hmm. really good articles out. If you just talk about, you type in adrenal fatigue and exercise, it talks about the biggest issues with you know, you're actually with adrenal fatigue, you're draining your cortisol values more, mm-hmm. With exercise, because your body thinks you're in a stressed or what's called a sympathetic state, which means your body is thinking you're about to run from a bear.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's not all about hitting the CrossFit gyms or hardcore weight training. It's about what different things, even, I mean, my favorite thing right now for people that are so stressed out is a Hatha yoga class. And I take it from my own personal experience. I had a good friend, she was doing Hatha yoga training and teaching. And so I was like, well, of course I'm going to go support you. So I did classes with her, and I think I felt my best when doing those classes. It was stretching, it was mm-hmm. isometric contraction. So I stood there, I held a position for, you know, 5 breaths, I think is what she was saying. And right there, I noticed I felt stronger, my posture got better, mm-hmm. my knee and hip stopped hurting as much, and voila, I also had less stress. So couple things to consider when you're considering your exercise mm-hmm. routines, never zero to 1,000.
I meet someone that really knows where you're at in your health in regards to injury, in regards to those types of things. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's like, you know, there's all kinds of things regenerative you can go ahead and do in regards to helping knee joints and stuff. And then
absolutely.
I think our final pillar is sleep. So
is that our final
is that it?
I think so. We'll have some basic take homes, but I do think our final pillar is sleep.
All right.
I mean, so, how many people sleep out there?
I know. Well, everybody sleeps, but how many of you actually sleep all the way through?
Or long enough.
And so I can't tell you how many patients that obviously, or clients that come on in, and unfortunately they're entrepreneurs, or they just feel like, you know, I have to get everything done. And it's like they sleep for 5 hours, and this is accumulated mm-hmm. over 5 to 10 years. And then they finally mm-hmm. come in, and they're typical zonked, which mm-hmm. anybody knows that word, like on a marathon, and then you reach mile 20 and then you zonk mm-hmm. and then it's like they're just done. And so obviously sleep is a huge issue and it's extremely complicated, but obviously some of the things I think that you can do is obviously getting your sleep hygiene, you know, mm-hmm. obviously try to remove electronics, you know, get the television out of the room if you have, you know, if it's been there for 20 years, then sometimes it just needs to stay. But there's different things you can do with yellow sunglasses, I do believe, that helps take the blue light out of the picture so it doesn't mess with your circadian rhythm.
And affect your melatonin level at night. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So obviously sleep hygiene is about what, an hour before your goal bedtime. And the biggest thing with sleep, I think, is a schedule. It's sad to say, but I mean, try and get ready for bed every night at the same time. Try and hit your actual, like you're turning the lights out at the same time every night. Your body will get into a natural rhythm. The biggest issue is nobody today, I think, is in an actual rhythm. And then we, like me, like I like to sleep in on Saturdays, right? Well, I mean, on a consistent basis though, if you're going to wake up at 6 or 7 o'clock every morning, pick that same time, even on days off, because you'll actually have better sleep during those cycles. But I think the biggest thing I hear from women today, and I'm sure you noticed that as well, Dr. Wallace, is that, you know, my biggest question, difficulties falling asleep or staying asleep or both. And I have a lot of women who will lay there and all of a sudden they've laid down and their brain is like everything. Mm-hmm. Oh, I forgot to do this. And oh, I need to do this tomorrow. And oh, you know, and so I always encourage people, well, if you're in the middle of a thought and you can't get it out of your mind, write it down. I think that that's something that I've encouraged people to do. And then at least, you know, tomorrow you're not going to forget about it. I think lists mm-hmm. are amazing. So write it down. Is it one good thing next to sleep hygiene? And then of course there's other things that can support staying asleep as well. Meditation. There's some great apps out there that I can really help change mm-hmm. your brain wave into a more calming pattern so that your brain isn't feeling so staticky and just mm-hmm. alert. You know, we don't need to go to bed and be wide awake, right? Our goal is to go to bed and, you know, be tired, ready for sleep.
So binaural beats. And so you can put on binaural beats in the background when you're mm-hmm. cooking or anything like that, helps reset some of the brainwave pattern. Mm-hmm. And so obviously, you know, sleep is difficult. So sometimes hormones have to be taken, you know, saliva testing, those types of things have to be shown. It's like if your cortisol spiked high, obviously supplementation can be go. But I think what it also does, it leads into one of our next talks, is like creating less anxiety, because we have so many fingers and everything. We have children, we have a job, we have a husband, we have maybe 3 jobs, and then we have all these things, then anxiety spikes. And so I'm not a big firm believer of listening to everything on Facebook, but they do have this one country cowboy philosopher, and he talks about that. He works in New York, but he also has a ranch, and he says, today's society, we have so many things. We have our brain everywhere. And he says, back in the days, it was just like, I had to get up, feed the cows. I had to, you know, do some basically physical labor. So I had maybe three things I had to think about.
Right.
I slept great. Slept fantastic. Now we have three multiplied, you know, to the fourth power. We're always thinking about stuff that we have to do. And sometimes just bringing simplistic things back into your life, saying no to people, those types of things really opens us up to actually having the ability to go ahead and sleep.
I think that that's a good statement. That's not a pillar here, but I think saying no is a really good thing that I encourage patients to do. We have a lot of people pleasers today, and you try and help your family, your kids, your siblings, your parents, you know, with everything. And sometimes I remind people, you have to be aware that it's going to affect you as well. So, I mean, how is that going to affect, you know, your sleep? Because you helped everybody else. None of your stuff is now done, right?
Correct.
So being aware of that.
Mm-hmm. So I think along with water and sleep, I know obviously all the pillars, but I think obviously sleep is one of the major ones. I know it's like with obviously owning a business, you know, in that context, it's like, I don't sleep as much, but when I do, it's like everything just feels energized. Obviously growth hormone increases, those types of things helps the body heal. All of those things just help repair. Our body repairs itself when we're sleeping. So if we're only sleeping 4 to 5 hours and we're finally in deep sleep, well, the body doesn't repair itself. So that means the damage that's happened the next day compounds. We don't heal ourselves. The damage the next day happens, you know, we're dehydrated.
And well, so, you had also said, and when we were discussing about carbohydrates, like sleep can be impacted by the food we eat. And I also think in contrast to that statement, so if carbohydrates help increase the production of serotonin and melatonin in our system, thanks to insulin, well, they can also negatively impact our sleep pattern if we're eating too close to bedtime. And I have a lot of clients that like to eat their food. I mean, gosh, and then what, 20, 30 minutes later, they're going to bed. Well, I mean, that's a lot of conflict. I think a lot of people notice they are more inclined to wake up in the middle of the night repetitively if they're eating later and they're not getting deeper sleep. And obviously, you know, more information should be done because some people do better with higher protein meals before bedtime.
Correct.
But I think a lot of people take advantage of cookies and milk or
ice cream.
Who doesn't love dessert before bed? But, you know, how is that going to impact your sleep? And again, sleep is when we repair, right? Sleep is when, like Dr. Well said, our growth hormone is increased. Yep. And so if we're not getting our repair done and we're not having good cell health, which is supposed to happen when we sleep, I mean, how is the next day going to move on, and how are we going to feel that next day, and how's our energy going to be, and how are we going to be able to help my patients, your patients, or, you know, whatever business you work in? So I think that that's definitely a consideration to remember.
So I think all these pillars of health are fantastic. So, you know, we want to go ahead.
Sorry. I just want to pull one last thing out. This is something that is on our foundation handout, and it is, I think, my most happy one for a natural circadian rhythm. It's sunlight. Now, it's not a pillar, but it's like one of the tools that we like to utilize to support people. So I think we're really scared of the sun today with all the skin cancers going on, but a little bit of sunlight can go a long way to help your natural circadian rhythm in the morning, so that in the evening you actually have better sleep patterns. So I will tell patients first thing in the morning while you're getting that glass of water, and try and get 5 minutes of sunlight in to help encourage your natural circadian rhythm to balance out. And in turn, slowly over time, you might notice better sleep cycles. So just in that sleep standpoint, that's my last little statement for our foundations of health that we've been discussing today here.
So we have this lovely, So we have this lovely handout. So, you know, if you need to go ahead and have any kind of consultation, obviously you can check us on out at infusionhealth.org. Dr. Sundermeyer and myself would love to go ahead and chat more in regards to some of your health issues. Obviously, where I think we're very well astute in regards to handling that. And so obviously the link will be put on up. And then hopefully it's like, if you guys want to private message us in regards to, or send us an email at infusionhealth or info@infusionhealth.org, or just follow our website.
Yeah. And you can always find this handout on our website as well. We will be putting it up. And I always remind people, you know, this is something that we discuss. I do change things around for my own clients, but this is definitely a very general statement. It's not the end all cure all, but it is a good starting place for a lot of people. And I think that that's really important. So with that being said, we will be seeing you next week, or for our next show with One Day. You know, how can it make you and the difference in a day? With myself, Dr. Sundermeyer, and Dr. Wallace.
Thanks everybody for listening to us. So I hope you got some good pointers out of it, and we look forward to talking to you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think we'll have some really great information moving forward, and I think that it's going to be really awesome talking and speaking with all of you. I hope you enjoyed everything that we have today, and we will see you next time.
Bye, everyone.
You've been listening to the Life Enhancement Medicine Hour with Dr. Wallace and Dr. Sundermeyer, bringing the power of health to your listening ears. You can learn more by visiting infusionhealth.org. That's infusionhealth.org. Follow them on social media and join the movement to better health.
Coming to you straight out of the shell, this is WNUT The Nut. Hello, caller.
They're lying to you.
Must be a first-time caller.
You think this is funny? They're fried in oil.
What's fried in oil?
Your nuts.
My nuts?
Uh-oh.
No, your precious snack nuts are fried in oil.
Ugh.
Fisher Oven Roasted Never Fried Nuts are never fried. They're just nuts oven roasted with sea salt. That's it.
Mmm.
Now, go look for the red topped can.
Fisher Oven Roasted Never Fried Nuts. Never fried, nothing to hide.
Coming to you straight out of the shell, this is WNUT The Nut. Hello, caller.
They're lying to you.
Must be a first-time caller.
You think this is funny? They're fried in oil.
What's fried in oil?
Your nuts.
My nuts?
Uh-oh.
No, your precious snack nuts are fried in oil.
Ugh.
Fisher Oven Roasted Never Fried Nuts are never fried. They're just nuts oven roasted with sea salt. That's it.
Mmm.
Now, go look for the red-topped can.
Fisher Oven Roasted Never Fried Nuts. Never fried, nothing to hide.